Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson. This program is aimed at English learners, so we speak a little slower and we use words and phrases especially written for people learning English.
Today on the program, you will hear from Anna Mateo. Later, we will present our American history series, The Making of a Nation. But first, Vietnam is seeking closer relations with Australia in an effort to limit Chinese expansion in the South China Sea. On March 15th, Vietnam and Australia signed a strategic partnership to increase contacts between high-level officials of the two countries. Australian officials have described the agreement as an upgrade to partnerships in effect since 2009. The latest partnership includes promises to deal with security threats and work together on maritime policymaking. Vietnam wants help in controlling Chinese interests in the South China Sea. Australia hopes to increase its business and security interests in Southeast Asia. Frederick Burke is a lawyer in Ho Chi Minh City. He spoke about the partnership between Australia and Vietnam.
To the extent that they're both concerned about, especially things like freedom of navigation in the East Sea, they have a shared interest with Vietnam in keeping the sea lanes open.
China and Vietnam have disputes over sovereignty issues in the South China Sea. Taiwan and three other Southeast Asian countries also have territorial claims in the same area. Experts say Vietnam is seeking better relations with other nations to protect fishing boats, energy exploration at sea, and its territorial claims. Australia belongs to an alliance that includes India, Japan, and the United States. Heads of state from that group met in the Philippines in November to discuss how to keep the South China Sea open. Australia and Japan called for rules-based order and respect for international law. Vietnam and India upgraded their strategic partnership last year. In 2014, Japan agreed to sell Vietnam 6 ships and boats for gathering intelligence. This month, the United States sent an aircraft carrier group to Vietnam. China's government has angered other claimants to parts of the South China Sea over the past 10 years. Chinese crews have built up and developed small islands in the sea for possible military use. And Chinese Coast Guard ships have sailed in waters near areas claimed by other claimants. Australia has no claim to the sea. But both Australia and Vietnam consider China their top trading partner. Observers say this means the countries are unlikely to enter into conflict with China at sea. Trung Nguyen is International Relations Dean at the Ho Chi Minh University of Social Sciences and Humanities. He says Vietnam may be interested in help from Australia because it cannot tell what the United States will do in the South China Sea dispute.
With the policy, Vietnam can develop some kind of counterbalance against China in the case of the absence of American presence in the region. Even though Australia is a second-tier power, in some sense they can make up for the U.S. in some aspects when the U.S. is going back to America First policy.
Australia signed the partnership with Vietnam as a way to improve relations with the 10-member Association of Southeast Asian Nations. Australian officials consider ASEAN's members as an important market for Australian companies. This month, the Vietnamese airline company Vietjet said it plans to begin flights between Ho Chi Minh City and the Australian city of Brisbane. It said the goal is to help with integration and trade exchange in the area. In 2016 and 2017, trade between Australia and Vietnam reached $9 billion. That amount makes Vietnam Australia's 15th largest trading partner.
From VOA Learning English, this is the Health and Lifestyle Report. We are what we eat. This is an old expression, but one worth knowing. A recent look at diets around the world shows that people who eat healthy food, and not too much of it, live longer. But which areas of the world have the best diets? The Lancet Global Health Medical Journal has published findings on whose diets are the best. Researchers studied the dietary quality of people in 187 countries from 1990 to 2010. The Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation and Medical Research Council supported this study. It found that foods found in some of the healthiest diets, Mediterranean, New Nordic, French, and Japanese, may be very different, but they do have things in common. They are all heavy on local seasonal foods and limit processed foods. They are high in vegetables and seafood and low in red meat. Many studies have been done on the health benefits of the Mediterranean diet. This diet has lots of fruits, vegetables, whole grains, nuts, and olive oil. The diet has moderate amounts of fish and poultry. Red meat and foods high in sugar and salt are not big parts of this diet. Scientists and food experts from five Nordic countries borrowed ideas from the Mediterranean diet to develop a new, healthier regional diet. This new Nordic diet has whole grain cereals like oats and rye, vegetables such as Brussels sprouts, broccoli and beets, eggs, seafood, fruits, oil, low-fat milk, and cheese. Olive oil is a common part of the Mediterranean diet. The new Nordic diet uses rapeseed oil instead. Very sugary desserts are not common in this diet. And the new Nordic diet suggests cooking food at a lower temperature. Techniques such as baking and boiling help foods keep more of their nutritional value. The World Health Organization says that Japanese people are some of the longest living people on the planet. The life expectancy there is 87 years old for women and 80 for men. Researchers believe the Japanese diet is the reason for such long lifespans. The diet has many foods that are low in calories and high in nutrients. Japanese people eat a lot of seaweed, tofu, miso soup, rice, vegetables, and fish. People on the island of Okinawa live especially long. And local food traditions may help explain why. For example, the tradition there is to stop eating when your stomach feels 80% full. The Okinawan diet is also especially heavy on nutrient-rich vegetables. While food habits on Okinawa may be changing, the island is still home to many people over 100 years of age. Researchers suggest this may be from eating fewer calories over a long period of time. However, French people eat fatty foods but do not get fat, and they live a long time. Researchers call this the French paradox. A paradox is something made up of opposites and seems impossible, but it is, in fact, possible. The reason why French eat fatty foods without getting fat may be very simple. They simply eat less. Serving sizes in French restaurants and in products sold in stores are smaller than those in the United States. And generally speaking, most French people do not snack. This means they do not eat food between meals. Americans are eating too many bad foods and not enough nutritious foods. Some of the foods Americans love the most are the worst for them. These include sugary drinks, salty foods, and processed meats, such as bacon and hot dogs. And Americans are not eating enough healthy foods to increase their chances of living longer. That is the message from researchers at Tufts University in the state of Massachusetts. Their 2017 study includes a nationwide look at people's eating habits. They found that about half of all U.S. deaths from heart disease, stroke, and type 2 diabetes are from a poor diet. The lead author of this study is Renata Mica, and the senior author is Dariush Musafarian. They published their findings in the Journal of the American Medical Association. The study found that most Americans do not eat the recommended amounts of good foods, such as fruits and vegetables, seafood, whole grains, seeds, and nuts. Nuts, for example, contain healthy fats that can help raise good cholesterol levels. But a lack of these good foods can speed up what researchers call cardiometabolic problems. Cardiometabolic problems include stroke, diabetes, or heart disease. Noel Mueller is a health researcher at Johns Hopkins University in the state of Maryland. Mueller wrote about the Tufts study. He explains that a culture's diet greatly influences the number of deaths caused by cardiometabolic disease. Eating certain bad foods, such as processed meats and sugary drinks, can also speed up cardiometabolic problems. Eating too much processed meat raises unhealthy cholesterol levels. Sugary drinks may lead to diabetes. And, Mueller explains, a high intake of sodium or salt can increase blood pressure. In this case, intake is the amount of something that you eat or drink.
The highest proportion of deaths was due to high sodium intake, also high sugar sweetened beverage intake, high intake of processed meats, and low intake of nuts and seeds.
He says people can increase their chances of living longer by eating the right foods. Eat less processed foods with high salt levels and eat more fresh foods.
Diet does contribute significantly to the overall proportion of cardiometabolic disease deaths. If we lower intake of sodium through reduction of processed foods, which contribute about 80% of our sodium intake in the U.S., we can see improvements in cardiometabolic health, including reductions in the number of deaths that are due to cardiometabolic disease.
The Tufts study says public health policies targeting unhealthy eating may help prevent some deaths. But in the end, policy and public awareness campaigns only do so much. It is up to people to think about what they put into their bodies. Health experts writing about these diet studies remind us of another thing that countries with the healthiest diets have in common. People walk a lot. In addition to eating right and eating less, walking may help people live longer and live healthier. And that's the Health and Lifestyle Report. I'm Anna Mateo.
Welcome to The Making of a Nation, American History in VOA Special English. In 1864, the Union of Northern States and the Confederacy of Southern States were still fighting. The Civil War began in 1861. Each side had its own constitution. Under the Union Constitution, Americans were supposed to elect a president every 4 years. 1864 was such a year. And even though a great civil war was being fought, citizens of the North prepared to choose a leader. Shep O'Neill and Morris Joyce tell the story of the election of 1864.
Abraham Lincoln was completing his first term as president. He hoped to lead the nation for another 4 years. He wanted to win the war between the states. He wanted to rebuild the Union. Lincoln's Republican Party was divided. Moderate Republicans wanted to rebuild the Union as soon as the war ended. They believed Southern states should be welcomed back with full rights. Radical Republicans disagreed strongly. They demanded severe punishment for the Southern rebels.
For many months, President Lincoln worked to build a political majority. He formed a new group called the National Union Party. It included moderate Republicans and some Democrats. Lincoln succeeded in gaining the support of state and local political leaders. It soon became clear that Lincoln would be the party's presidential candidate in the election.
Several hundred radical Republicans held their own convention in Cleveland, Ohio. They formed a new political party called the Radical Democracy. They nominated explorer John Fremont as their candidate for the national election. Fremont had been the Republican presidential candidate 8 years earlier. Most of the radical Republicans in Congress did not take part in the convention in Cleveland. They refused to support Fremont. They felt he had no chance to win the election.
President Lincoln's new National Union Party held its convention in Baltimore, Maryland. Convention delegates quickly approved a party statement. The statement supported the Union and the war. It opposed slavery. Delegates then were ready to nominate their candidates for president and vice president. On the first ballot, they chose Lincoln to run again. And they chose Democrat Andrew Johnson of Tennessee to run as vice president.
During the campaign, Lincoln was advised to begin peace talks with the South. End the war, he was told. Bring Southern states back into the Union. Settle the question of slavery later. Lincoln, however, believed his policies were right for the nation. He would not surrender them, even if they meant his defeat in the election. Lincoln hated the war, but he would not end it until military victory ended slavery and guaranteed political union.
In August 1864, Lincoln wrote, "For some days past, it seems that this administration probably will not be reelected. Then it will be my duty to cooperate with the president-elect to save the Union. We must do this between Election Day and Inauguration Day, for he will have been elected on such ground that he cannot possibly save the Union afterwards."
The Democratic Party held its nominating convention in Chicago, Illinois. Peace Democrats were in firm control. Peace Democrats demanded an immediate end to the Civil War. They did not care if the North and South remained apart permanently. The party's statement contained these words: "After 4 years of failure to restore the Union by war, justice, humanity, liberty, and the public welfare demand that immediate efforts be made to end the fighting. Let us look to a convention of states or other peaceable means to restore the Union."
The Democratic statement did not discuss slavery. It did say, however, that any state wishing to return to the Union could do so without losing any of its constitutional rights. This was believed to include the right to own slaves. Convention delegates approved the statement. Then they nominated General George McClellan as their candidate for president.
3 days after the Democratic Party convention closed, the Union won an important military victory. Union troops captured Atlanta, Georgia. Atlanta was one of the last remaining industrial cities of the South. Its loss seriously hurt the Confederacy. Now the people of the North could understand their side was winning the war. Public opinion began to change. The Peace Democrats lost popular support. President Lincoln and his National Union Party gained popular support. Even some supporters of radical Republican candidate John Fremont turned to Lincoln. Fremont withdrew from the race.
When the people voted in November, their choice was between Abraham Lincoln and George McClellan. A vote for Lincoln meant a vote for continuing the Civil War until it was won, until the Union was saved. A vote for McClellan meant a vote for stopping the war, stopping short of victory. By midnight of Election Day, it was clear that Lincoln had won. He got only about 500,000 more popular votes than McClellan. But when electoral votes were counted, he got 212 to McClellan's 21.
Before Lincoln's second inaugural, He agreed to hold peace talks with representatives of the Confederacy. The talks would be held at a Union fort on the Chesapeake Bay. Lincoln was very firm in one demand. The talks, he said, must discuss peace for our one common country. There could be no talk, he said, of Confederate independence. The Confederate representatives said they could not accept those terms. The peace talks ended in failure.
Lincoln returned to Washington. He prepared a message that he wished to send to Congress. It contained a program he felt could end the war within a few weeks. Lincoln proposed $400 million in economic aid to the southern states. The money could be used to pay slave owners for freeing their slaves. Half the money would be paid if the southern states gave up their struggle by April 1st. The other half would be paid if they approved by July 1st a constitutional amendment ending slavery. As part of the program, Lincoln would pardon all political crimes resulting from the Southern Rebellion. He also would return all property seized by Union forces.
Lincoln's cabinet officers rejected the program. They urged him not to send it to Congress. They said it would be seen as a sign of weakness. Lincoln was surprised by the reaction. He thought his cabinet would gladly end the war, a war that was costing the government $3 million a day and the lives of the nation's young men. But he accepted the cabinet's advice. He did not send his message to Congress.
On March 4th, 1865, Abraham Lincoln was sworn in as president for a second term. This is part of what he said. On this occasion, 4 years ago, all thoughts were directed to a coming civil war. All feared it. All tried to prevent it. Both parties opposed war. But one of them would make war rather than let the nation live. The other would accept war rather than let it die. And the war came. We hope and we pray that this terrible war may pass away quickly. But God may wish it otherwise. He may have it continue until the riches earned from 250 years of slavery are gone. It may continue until every drop of blood made by the slave owner's whip is paid for by another made by the soldier's sword. With malice toward none, with charity for all, with firmness in the right, as God gives us to see the right, let us strive on to finish the work we are in. Let us heal the nation's wounds. Let us do all possible to get and keep a just and lasting peace among ourselves and with all nations.
That night, the White House was open to the public. Thousands of people went to see the president. Poet Walt Whitman gave this description. I saw Mr. Lincoln dressed all in black. He was shaking hands, looking very sad, as if he would give anything to be somewhere else.
And that's our program for today. Listen again tomorrow to learn English through stories from around the world. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson.